Happy Wednesday. Welcome back to In Focus. Brady Bowman with you. Here on the other side of the table with me is Dr. Timothy Schaefer. He's Assistant Director for the K-State Institute for Civil Discourse and Democracy. Do remind folks that the phone lines are open, 785-537-1350. We have about 11 minutes left in the show, and talking about the primary election results. So far, it looks like with all the Johnson County precincts finally reporting in, just before 8 o'clock this morning, those came in, and Chris Kobach, Secretary of State, has a 191-vote edge over Governor Jeff Coyer. However, there's a lot of provisional ballots that are still out there, a lot of mail-in ballots that are still out there that will be finalized next Friday. So it's pretty safe to say that this one's still too close to call.
It is not over. Yeah, this is the too close to call category, and that's very true.
Very, very true. Looking at some things last night, watching election coverage last night, and you kind of pointed it out, Tim, in that last segment, that one thing you always notice when you're looking at election nights, whether it's primary, we got midterms, of course, coming up in November, presidential elections, no matter, you look at things and they're breaking down all the congressional maps and all these district maps, and one thing you always notice, and I know it got brought up last night, with the Ohio race, Ohio 12 district race, and they were just talking about how that was actually just recently redistricted from what it was, and I believe 2011 is when maybe they went ahead and redrew those maps. Mm-hmm. And that's one thing that I think you notice a lot, and I know that's something that's it's been in the headlines, it is talked about, but sometimes I feel like it's just not talked about enough because that's such a huge aspect of elections is how districts are carved out. You were talking in the last segment about just how diverse the districts are in the state of Kansas.
Yeah, no, I mean, gerrymandering is a huge thing, and both political parties do it, right? I mean, so it's not one side or the other, but it's a significant thing that, you know, for those who are coming in thinking about elections, that it's just kind of an equal, clean slate every time. It's not true, right? I mean, it's advantageous to your own political party, depending on who's in, you know, the governor's office at the time when the census comes out and when you get to reapportion and adjust. You hedge certain ways, and it's a significant factor. And some states in recent years, Michigan very recently is going forward with, and it's gone through the courts, that they will have a nonpartisan a committee that will be charged with that responsibility rather than having it be elected officials, politicians deciding those districts. And so, you know, there are some ways, some of the structural dynamics of politics that can come into play and can be significant in affecting how we, how we think about elections, because it's not always just, you know, everybody's got a 50-50 chance every time. I mean, people can be swayed or change their positions, but if you're starting with a leg up one way or the other, depending on your political affiliation, that can be a significant thing.
Let's talk about the team factor.
The team factor?
The team, T-E-E-N
factor. Oh, okay, yeah, the team factor.
There are three Republican candidates that are teenagers. Patrick Cacera, PK, received 3,123 votes. Tyler Ruzick, 2,217. Joseph Tutera, 1,541. That's a total of 6,881 votes.
Yeah.
PK's not a teen, though. Just clarification on
okay.
him. Yeah, he's an older dude.
Okay.
Not too much older. He came in once and did an interview with him. He's the one that's a pastor.
Okay.
I believe in Overland Park.
But I think you're right.
With Ruzick and Tutera, that's a significant number of votes when you take into consideration we have a 191 vote gap.
And
these guys, you know, they do it basically. It's kind of like what I did over my summer vacation essay material, and in many respects they did it out of jest.
But it has implications. That was something that I was thinking about before, and I think during the break we were mentioning a little bit is the. you know, we're talking about 191 votes right now. We're going to go back and forth about all of these things, right? Reminiscent of hanging chads and everything else in previous elections. But thinking about the implications of all these other candidates, right? These other five candidates on the Republican side who, when we total up, come short of just under 59,000 votes, right? So we're talking about the two leading vote getters at respective numbers of 126,66 and then 126,257 for Collier and Kobach. But there's nearly another 59,000 votes that now just don't count or matter. And, you know, part of that long title of what I do over at K-State is thinking about what are the ways that people make decisions, right? And one of them, voting is one really simple way to do it, right? You get to go tick a box or you push a button, because we use mostly screens to do that. But there are other ways to make some decisions. And the state of Maine, for example, has used something called ranked choice voting, which allows you to, if somebody doesn't get an outright majority, to say, hey, here's my first candidate, but if they don't win or if they don't make it, I'd like my vote to go to this person. And so there have been efforts in the United States. Other countries have used this to great benefit, frankly, to address these kinds of concerns, because all of a sudden now you've got a whole segment of the voting population who did actually come out, right? Even though the overall numbers, percentages are still fairly low, having their vote, quote, count. And I think there's some implication there. And so, you know, as we made the news a number of months ago in Kansas, when all these young people were running for governor, and some people from out of state, right? There were two folks from the state of Washington, I think. I forget where.
It was one Northeast. Was.
Yeah.
I think they were both from Northeast. One was from Massachusetts.
Okay. Then I had that wrong. But yeah, but you know, kind of making a mockery of some of these state laws. But I mean, these are implications. It's one thing to be kind of jokey about maybe running and getting 1,000 votes or something like that, but realizing that you have a significant impact, right? And the same thing that we're seeing right now playing in that special election in the 12th congressional district in Ohio, right? 30 party candidates. And I'm not saying, you know, don't vote your conscience or have kind of a position, but realizing in our two party system, the way that typically across this country our elections are structured, there has to be some intentionality and strategy behind it. Unless you're, you know, unless, and this is where it's really hard because we can't know all of these things, but if that person who voted for one of those other candidates would not have voted for either Kobach or Collier, then it doesn't really matter. But presumably they may have or would have. And so that's, as we go forward, remembering full well that, you know, 191 thereabout number of votes are going to be really contested when there were, you know, just under 59,000 other votes that now just don't matter.
Here with Dr. Timothy Schaefer, the Assistant Director of the KC Institute for Civil Discourse and Democracy. And, you know, kind of looking ahead, maybe 10 days ahead from now or 2 weeks ahead from now, if there is a recount, what a situation that's going to be, right? Because you're looking at a recount effort with two candidates, one of them being the Secretary of State, who is in charge of elections, and the other person being the sitting governor right now. Well, I mean, the dynamics of that is just insane.
It was not lost on me as I was going to the Secretary of State website and seeing Kris Kobach's smiling face in the top right corner, right? You know, there's something peculiar about this, and not to think that there's going to be anything devious in the process, but, right, we do have two prominent statewide candidates. Kobach has national identity and attention because of a lot of recent efforts around immigration, for example, and voting. This is going to continue to be, as Kansas has been in recent years, one of those reference points connected to national politics, you know, as a referendum on the president, these kinds of things. And so we're going to have it be at the forefront of a lot of the conversations. And back to one of your earlier comments about Laura Kelly, you know, it begs the question, what happens with her in the mix of all this? Because that's going to be the front page news. And does she get lost in the scheme of things? I mean, she's a longtime person around the state house, you know, was viewed, I think, by many within the Democratic Party as being able to do some fundraising, those types of things. And so in the scheme of things, it will be interesting to see how this plays out. What are the implications of a prolonged, and maybe not as prolonged as we're thinking, process to finalize the votes on the Republican ticket?
It will be interesting. I know a lot of national voices watching coverage last night were saying that if you're a Democrat in Kansas, you'd want Kobach to come out of the primary because there's a feeling that he's more vulnerable in the general. But I don't know. You know, I go back and forth on that.
Well, yeah, and caricatures of candidates, you know, the kind of negative campaigning is the dominant frame that we are accustomed to anymore. But realizing there are some significant implications there. And I think, you know, I don't want to put Dave on the spot here, but posing a question, right? via the Twitter, you know, what does it take to step outside of one's party affiliation? If you were one of the Republican primary voters who was, you know, not in support of Kobach, what, you know, if he wins, for example, is that there's that same sentiment, a kind of a never Kobach position. How does that play out? And do people actually cross a political affiliation line? That's the big question to be answered.
There's a concept that I I've got the name for it, defensive voting.
Yeah.
Voting against the person you don't want in office. I was talking with some friends about this the other day. You know, what scares you about the process? And not so much who do you really want to vote for, but who scares you?
Who do you not want? Yeah. No, that the voting is a strategy.
It will be interesting. We'll be talking about it for definitely for the next couple of weeks into November. It's an election year.
Here we are.
Dr. Timothy Schaefer, the Assistant Director of the K-State Institute of Civil Discourse and Democracy, thanks so much for coming on.
Thanks, everybody, for
listening. It'll be on demand on our website a little later today.
And if people thought the state of Kansas was screwed up before...
Shop local. From flooring to inspiration to expert advice, Carpet One of Manhattan.